Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Counterparts. My name is John Henry Soto. As always, George Batista is here. We're doing something. I don't know if this is different. Is this different, George? I don't know. No, maybe a little different. No, I don't know.
Maybe a little bit. But
yeah, I mean, when we interview people, those are spotlight, right? Those are spotlight conversations with creative minds. And today we're going to be doing a show about something that George and I know a lot about. Well, actually, we're actually going to learn a lot today, too, about the Bronx, where we actually became humans. I don't know how human we are, but we're very excited to bring this to you, and we're going to have a good time, so just stick around. All right, short and sweet.
I love it.
Welcome. Welcome to the show. So George and I were talking, and this was, I don't know when it was, a couple of weeks ago. We're talking about different topics and different things that we want to discuss on the show. Now, we've been doing guests, right? We've had some incredible guests, right? I mean, we cannot complain about the guests. We've had Steve Smith, right? Legendary drummer for Journey, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We had David Sanchez, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, E Street Band. We had Kenny Aronoff, who's played on over 300 million records. We've had Lee Haney, eight-time Mr. Olympia, you know, incredible, incredible guests that we have. And the list goes on. We had Bobby Wiggins on, I think it was last week, right?
Yep.
The work that he's doing throughout the world through Narcanon and drug rehabilitation. Incredible, incredible work. So we have been so fortunate that we've had these guests. But every now and then, George and I, we talk and we're like, you know what? We want to talk about a subject that maybe we don't have a guest that we could bring in to kind of talk about the subject, right? You know, we had some New Yorker that we, you know, that we can bring in, like Giuliani or something. You know, that's a great guest to have, right? Because he's like all about New York, right?
Right.
So that'd be really cool. But for now, it's just us.
Sorry, you got us.
We're two New Yorkers. We're from the Bronx, born and raised. Now, we currently don't live in the Bronx, and I'm going to say that as a transparency. So I want to be transparent so people aren't thinking like, hey, where in the Bronx you live? Well, we don't live there anymore, but I spend most of my life there. So did my family, and so did George. And for the most part, I enjoyed a lot of it. There were some rough times, you know, for me. There were some rough times, but I did enjoy a lot of it. And today we're going to go over some of the history of the Bronx. George and I are going to talk about, the building that I grew up in, because there's a lot of history in that building. And there's some new developments in that building, actually, that I think are interesting. And we're going to talk about music, because that's where George and I learned to play music. And we played, that's where we started our bands, our first band, our second band, right? Everything was just based on that. Hey, look who's on.
Oh, David Breyer. Oh. How are you, sir?
All right, David Breyer is on.
To you. So
that's actually, look, David.
Ah, very nice, see?
Brand intervention. Yes. Always at my back.
Mine is on a Kindle, but still, hey.
Yeah, good, yeah, the Kindle.
I still have it.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we're going to be talking about the Bronx. And one of the things that was really interesting doing this research from the Bronx was that I was realizing how much I developed as a man there, where I always thought, you know, I developed more when I left or when I got married or when I started working at my church or whatever it was that I was doing. I thought that that's where more development happened. But it really, a lot of it happened throughout those years, you know, learning to deal with the struggles, getting the confidence to be able to move forward, getting the skill set to get a job, to move out, you know, all that stuff really was during those years, learning how to play. You know, I mean, how many hours did we just sit behind, you know, I sat with that guitar, you know, where my grandparents were worried, you know, they were concerned. They were like, you sure you don't want to go outside this year? I would just not go out. And George too. George played the drums, so George tortured his family a little bit more.
Oh yeah, I tortured my neighbors. I tortured my mother, my poor mother. Oh my God! But you know, it's interesting because you're you, as we're two Hispanics in the Bronx. We're playing music, but we're playing stuff that you really don't see much of in the Bronx.
That's true.
Right? We're listening to stuff that you really don't see.
We were just talking about that before we went live. But
Exactly. You know, we're listening to music and we're playing music that's really not music that you would find a lot of in the Bronx.
Correct. Correct. And I think that's what separated us and made us a little bit different in the sense that we were able to have the Latin influence because I was very influenced by Latin music. I love Latin music. I love salsa music. I love, you know, merengue music. I love all Spanish music, you know. have a little problem with the reggaeton because I know that it gets mixed into being Spanish. Yep. It's not that I don't like it. It's just that I really don't like it. Sorry. No, but
What are you trying to say, John?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's not to be a prude, but I think it's a little raw for me. It's too, it's too dirty, I guess you would say. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think that's a thing. But let me see. David is saying,
what time?
I don't know, but he's always throwing me off.
Oh, yes.
He's always in like 7-9. The hardest time signature I could ever think of playing.
Yes, I'm playing Sting's 7 Days. 7 Days is all she wrote.
I love that song, man.
That's a great song, man. I think it's in
We got to talk about songs like albums that we love one day, too. Because I was just listening to 10 Sumner's Tale, which is that album.
That's one of my favorite albums in the world.
It's one of my favorite albums. Yeah, it's not only one of my favorite Sting albums, but it's one of my favorite albums, period. Every track on that is, like, brilliant.
Yes.
Agreed. You know, do you know when that came out?
It was a 90...
It was like 30 years ago.
Yeah. That's next year, because they just celebrated the 30-year anniversary.
I think it's they're celebrating it now.
Now, okay.
I think it came out. Or maybe not. Maybe you're right. I think you're right. It's 92, I believe. But yeah, 30 years. I can't believe it. I remember when I bought it. You know, I mean, I was only 2 years old, so I started very early purchasing a lot of stuff.
And you were the same size.
God.
All right, we're off topic.
Upstate New York. I would punch your kneecaps.
Oh, I'm in the city.
Yeah, that's right. You're on top of the world. All right, so today we're going to be talking about the Bronx. Not that area behind them, but if you go further that way. You're looking downtown, or are you looking, is this uptown?
Well, the Empire State Building's like right
it's
over
there.
There
so but that's right in there. The center.
Yeah.
So I would say that's downtown. So Bronx is uptown. So you're this way. So if you go right in front and where George is, you have the Bronx. Now, the Bronx is one of the five boroughs. People always forget one of them. See who can name all the boroughs. There's, of course, Manhattan. There's Brooklyn. There is the Bronx. There is Queens. And there is the little island that everyone tends to forget. Good old Staten Island. Which is the borough that I've been to the least out of all the boroughs. But I have a connection to all of them. I've lived in Queens. I've lived in the Bronx. I've lived in Manhattan. I worked in Brooklyn. My daughter was born in Brooklyn. So New York City was really important to me overall. But the Bronx we're going to talk about. So, George, I know you said you've been digging up some facts or some stuff about the Bronx. Mm-hmm. You said you were going to surprise me. By the way, I apologize if I sound a little nasally. My nose is just a little nasally. What am I gonna say? So if it's not your microphones, or it's not your speakers, I should say.
By the way, the Bronx is the only borough that starts with the, right?
Right, because it's named after a family, right?
Correct. Now, so what, you want me to go over the cool facts?
Just give me one fact and then we'll just break it down.
We can do it as we go along. Maybe
Because I want to talk about the building that I grew up in because there's a lot of history in this building.
Absolutely. Okay. Did you know, John, that the Bronx had the first Hall of Fame in the United States?
Really?
Yes, it did.
That I did not know. I'm expecting to go... Yeah, I knew that, George. Wait, the first Hall
I told of you fame. I was going to surprise you. So check it out. The Hall of Fame for Great Americans is an outdoor sculpture gallery located on the grounds of Bronx Community College in the Bronx. Wow. It is the first such Hall of Fame in the United States.
So wait a minute. How long ago are we talking about?
I mean, this was a long time. This was,
so
this
wait,
was
obviously there's no Rock and Roll Hall of
no,
Fame.
No, because this includes like
Baseball Hall of Fame.
No, no, it doesn't have those figures. It has like George Washington. It has like
right.
Figures, and then figures of people that you really don't know, but still played an important role in history.
Oh, like an like America Hall of Fame.
Correct. But okay. It's the first Hall of Fame. So
in general,
as far as America. So the term Hall of Fame really was coined in the Bronx.
Wow. How about that?
And just so you guys can see, I'm putting up a little picture of it. This is what it looks like.
Okay. You know what? I've seen this.
This is this is Bronx Community College.
Yeah, and
this
I've
is
the
Hall
this.
Of Fame of Great Americans.
Holy cow. I had no idea. So, I thought those were ex-baseball players when I saw it.
Unless George Washington played baseball, it wasn't.
Well, he might have.
Well, that's true. Good.
I doubt it.
So, yeah. So that's a little fact for you there.
That's America. That's amazing. I didn't know that. Okay. So, Bronx Community College, I used to go to a little history there. My mom actually used to work there. She worked there for a little bit. She also went to school there for a little bit.
Really?
And yeah. And I remember going there and visiting her once when I was a little older. But yeah, she, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Cool. Mm-hmm. So, as far as the Hall of Fame is concerned, there's no proof that somebody in North Dakota didn't put up a monument and call it, this is the Hall of Fame of all the people that live here. So we can't really.
Listen, don't.
I'm just saying.
Don't screw up my facts, okay? Because this is fact, not alternative fact.
Hey, look who's on, who just left us.
Bobby Watts.
Hello,
sir.
I lived in the Bronx for almost 30 years, where my wife and I raised our three now grown sons in the Bronx. Love Brooklyn and love the Bronx. Very grateful to have grown up in New York City and have raised my kids in New York City. That's awesome.
Hey, Bobby, where in the Bronx did you live? I'm just curious.
That is so cool.
I grew up on two areas, Soundview. In Classen Point near the water.
I'm a skeptic.
John's a skeptic. He's always a skeptic. Yeah. And I grew, and then I spent my later years into my teenage years in Castle Hill. Castle Hill, right. In the Bronx.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. It does. Juanita. Looks like history. Yep. Juanita, yes. That was my mother's name.
Ah, look at that.
Yeah.
That's right. Cool.
David still wants to know what time signature.
5-4.
Yeah, 5-4. well, that's awesome. So yeah, I mean, you know, the Bronx and Brooklyn had this Northeast Bronx.
Williamsburg.
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 I used to ride my bike there a lot. I got mugged there. No, I'm just kidding. I did not get mugged there. I was just making a joke. But Williamsburg was awesome. Really nice up there, actually. I think that's where Albert Einstein Hospital was and all those really nice hospitals. Mississauga, you always great. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, man. How much did that cost?
Checked in the mail. I appreciate that. Thank you, Juanita. Go ahead about what?
No, you said you were going to go. You were going to talk about your building.
Oh, yes. But first, I'm not done with this whole Hall of Fame nonsense. No, I'm just kidding. No, but let's talk about legendary buildings. So a lot of people don't know. If you go to the Bronx and you see these old tenement buildings, like pre-war buildings,
right,
they don't have a name on them. So buildings just had a name. They didn't have a number back in the 20s and stuff. It wasn't like you went to an address. You just went to a building. Deliver this to... My building was called Chester Hall. There was another building called, it was down the way, it was DuPont.
Right.
There was another big, huge building called DuPont. And so we had all these buildings. And I remember when I was growing up, because when I realized that as a kid, people would say, where you live? And I'd be like, I live in Chester Hall. They'd be like, Chester Hall? Like, where's that? Right there on the corner of Southern Boulevard. Like, man, you live at 1058 Southern Boulevard, man.
Chester Hall.
Chester Hall, you sound all fancy. Yeah. No, but I like that. You know, Chester Hall, it just sounds cool. What is, I don't know who this is, but it says, "Shut up, skinny. You look like you've been working out, George. Let Jay just have his fans."
Yeah, well,
I can't tell what it is. It just says Facebook user for some reason. But listen, man,
don't be anonymous. Show yourself. Don't mess
with right?
me. I'm from the Bronx, man. Don't mess with
That's me. That's right. That's right. You know, the whole Bronx thing being tough is also something that was funny, because growing up there, everything around us seemed tough. But like, I was listening to B.B. King. Yeah. I'm like, the thrill is gone. Yeah. You know, I'm listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan. I'm listening to Santana. And I knew that that was going on around me, but I was so well protected by my grandparents as far as the violence and stuff like that. I didn't really jump into that whole toughness of the Bronx thing. You know what I mean? So even though I had some friends that I was grateful that I had them, because they helped me out during some, during some rough times. But so Chester Hall. So I'm going to show the building, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this building, because this was kind of and I have a story that I'll tell about it, and then we'll move on to another Bronx fact. Let me get a sip of coffee here so my voice can sustain this. Okay, I'm going to talk lower. Can you hear me? All right. So 1058 Southern Boulevard was the building that I was when I was born, and they had me like this. They brought me to 1058 Southern Boulevard. That is where I actually grew up. Didn't grow up much from this. It's kind of thick. But during those years, we lived in three different apartments in this one building. So now I go back every once in a while. I took this picture, I don't know how long ago. This was a while back.
I remember entering. Holy cow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this is where I was waiting for the, it's the 2 of the 5 train on Simpson Street.
Right.
In the South Bronx. And that building right there behind me is 1058 Southern Boulevard,
which my family lived there as well.
Yes. Yes. And I made a little graphic for us.
Oh, look at that.
So this is what it looks like. Actually, no, this is not what it looks like today. I'm going to show that picture as well, but those circles is where, I lived, because I'm cheesy that way. But yeah, I lived in 401 when I was born, which is out there on the right of your screen, or left, depending on how you're watching it. On the top there, that was the fifth floor. That was 503. And then 304, which is where your grandma lived, right? Mm-hmm. And in this building had such an amazing energy, because it was all our families were in there.
Yeah.
Our aunt was in 308, Titi Lula.
Yeah.
Titi Toya. Your grandmother, my grandmother lived in 401. When your grandmother moved out, we took your apartment.
Right.
We moved into that apartment.
Exactly.
And my grandmother loved moving. She just loved moving and buying new things. We moved like almost like 11 times.
Wow.
But 3 times in that building, and we lived there for a long time. But this particular building during the holidays, this is my story. All my uncles used to play guitar. That's where I learned to play guitar. That's where my passion came from, guitar. My first chords was Diolalo. And I had this little guitar that my grandfather bought me from a store right on, just on the block, called El Palacio. I don't know if you remember. Mm-hmm. Palacio was a music store. They sold records and all that stuff. And when I was 9 years old, my grandfather grabbed me by the hand. He's like, "Come on, we're going to go out." And we went out, and we go into this music store. And we would always go in there all the time. My grandfather, you know, back in those days, my grandfather used to hit the sauce a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He was a wonderful, wonderful man. He was my father. I never met my real dad. I couldn't have asked for a better role model as a father.
Right.
But, you know, he liked to drink in the early days when I was young. And so he would take me to this music store constantly. And whenever he would hear a song on the radio, he'd go in there to try to tell the guy. He didn't know the name of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And then he couldn't really sing. So he would walk in there and he goes, in Spanish, of course, he would say, "I got this song," and it goes, así. ¿Tú sabes la canción? Right. And dice, que no me demuestra. And this was, and the guy over the counter would be like, ¿qué? No. Conozco. I don't know that song. You know, you just would not know. But my grandfather would always go in there, and I would always go with him. But one day he grabbed me and he said, "Let's go. We're going to the music store." And he points up all these guitars and he's like, "Which one do you like?" So I'm just like, "Nah, I like that one." You know, like I was like nine. I was actually nine. And he brings one down. He shows it to me. We get those, the Mel Bay books, the ones that you can never learn out of anything out of.
Yes.
They're like useless, useless music books. But we got the two Mel Bay books, and then we got the guitar and a beautiful guitar case. It was a Spanish guitar, nylon strings. And he handed it to me. He's like, "Here." So I walk home. I'm walking home. I'm literally like, I can't believe, is he giving this to me? Or are we walking home to deliver it to somebody? I was like so amazed. And I got home, so he told my grandma, he goes, "Hey, le compré una guitarra." I bought him a guitar. So I opened it up, and my uncle had stopped by because he played, and my grandfather called him, and he said, "You know, you got to come." It was my grandmother's brother, Diolalo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he came by, and he showed me my first chord, which I'll never forget. It was an E chord. He put my fingers where they were, and he said, and he tuned the guitar, first of all. He tuned it for me. And then he showed me how to tune and stuff, which I didn't understand at all. But he showed me that first chord, the E chord. And I remember when I first hit that chord, my whole life
changed. Yeah.
Everything just happened. My whole existence fell out of that chord because it was just so – I created that sound
right. Based
on this fingering. You know what I mean? Because if I take my fingers off and I hit it, it's different. And I put it on there and it sounds really nice.
Right.
So it completely like changed my whole life. I'm like, and then during the holidays, we would my uncles all played. It was Tio Marcelo, if you remember Tio Marcelo, Tio Lalo, and a few other people from the building would all play guitar. So during the holidays, like during Christmas time, they would go around the buildings, you know, because remember, this building was a really lively building. A lot of people knew each other. It was it was a really, really beautiful place to grow up. It also had like a little area inside. So when you went in the building, you were sort of out away from the streets, right? Yeah. You were sort of like into this little community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they all would go around to all the apartments and knock on the door, and they would play the guitar. Then they would sing a song that, George, you probably remember that. It goes, "Si no me dan de beber, lloro." Right. So they would sing. Which basically translated means, "If you don't give me a drink, I'll cry," right? So, "Si no me dan de beber, lloro." So they all go around, and it's kind of a celebration. "If you don't give me a drink, I'll cry." So we went all around. Now, there was 54 apartments in this building, six stories, right? So after like the third floor, everyone is giving them drinks. So, so it became a little chaotic. We never really made it to the sixth floor. I don't think we ever made it past the third floor, to be honest. We would start down at the lobby. We'd go all the way up. And I would go with my guitar, even though I didn't really know how to play. But I would just like kind of like – I knew that one chord. And I knew it was in some of the songs.
Right.
I would just hit it. I would just hit it, you know. And I would go around with it. This happened a few Christmases, at least three or four Christmases that we would do this. And then everyone would disappear into houses. I don't know where everybody went.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it was just me and my grandfather. And my grandfather was at somebody's house sitting down talking.
Right.
Because my grandfather didn't play, but he would go along with us. And then I would just go home by myself with my guitar. And my grandmother would be like, "Where is everybody?" I was like, "I don't know." But they all separated. But anyway, this building was just wonderful. So I want to just show this a couple of more pictures that I have here. So this is the train that this was the lifeline for us. This is what got us into Manhattan. This is where the train that I took to see first musical shows. I took this train to go play gigs, right?
Mm-hmm.
gosh, I mean, this was the train I went to school in when I went to college for that week. And this was the stop that I would get on, Simpson Street is a very important street because it's the first street that my whole family moved to.
Mm-hmm.
when they arrived here in the 50s. They all lived in Simpson Street, and they were all kind of it seemed like there was an exodus, right? And everybody was coming, and then whoever could come first would come and get settled in and then help the next person come,
right?
And yes. it was a really nice thing. My grandfather came first. My grandfather got here. he got a job as a super working in a building at the, you know, and you know, boiler and doing all that stuff. And then one day he goes in to a like a pool hall kind of place, and he sees a television for the first time. He told me this story, and he sees a television. It was on Simpson Street, and he says that he's staring at it. He's like, didn't understand what was happening, like these images that were coming from this box. He called up my grandmother at the mm-hmm. time, who was still in Puerto Rico with my mom, and called and told her, it's this box that has all these, it's called una televisión, you know. Right. And he's talking to her, and he's explaining it to her, because Puerto Rico had not, there were still radio, yeah. Television was nowhere near there at this point, you know. I'm sure that some people had, but not in El Campo where people were living, you know. but yeah, Simpson was a big deal. And then recently, as I was researching for this episode, I wanted to kind of talk about this building, because there was I have a lot of stories about this building, which I only told one now. Maybe we'll do this again. I'll tell some more stories as the years go on. But one of the interesting things, I was always had affinity for this building.
Right.
So a few years ago, I did a podcast. Before we did this show, I did a podcast, and I was talking about this building. And it was an audio podcast. And then I wrote an article, a blog based on the Bronx and whatever. So I get a message from this guy named Lawrence Toby, who happens to be an architect who's working on some plans for this one particular building, 1058 Sullivan Boulevard. He just happened to find mm-hmm. my blog based on his research, and he found my blog and stuff. And so he reached out to me via email or from my website or something. And we got a phone call, and we started chatting, and we've been chatting ever since. And he keeps me up to date of where the building is. Because what happened in 2013, the building became just a real nightmare. Mm-hmm. It was actually on one of the top lists for one of the worst landlords in the country, actually.
Really?
Like and it had like 80 violations, and mm-hmm. like people were living with mold on the wall. Wow. Kids were getting sick. It was like disgusting. I saw pictures and everything. I didn't want to show those pictures because that's not a pleasant thing, but it really broke my heart to see that, you know. And he told me, he would call me and ask me questions to see if I remembered things about when I was a kid. So, George, I don't know if you remember this, but do you remember the entryway?
Yes.
Remember you mentioned there was a big corridor?
Kind
of a square, empty corridor. That's not empty anymore.
Really?
That's where the garbage goes now.
You're kidding me.
When you come out that door, there's this huge structure that they built, and they put, and you have to go in and you throw the garbage into that. Holy, that's where the garbage gets taken out. Now, you remember, we never saw garbage.
Right.
Garbage would be thrown in that thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we would bring it down to the basement, and the basement would, I don't know how they got rid of it. It's probably still there. But they would get rid of it somehow. So he was trying to figure out where the garbage was thrown out. And mm-hmm. what ended up happening, I don't know if you remember, there was a supermarket that was on the other side of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any pictures with it, but I do want to show another photo that I have here. But hold on one sec. You can talk, George, because I'm just in the middle of something.
Well, that's crazy that I can't believe that part of it. But it's interesting because I was, you know, I didn't spend much time in that building because I didn't spend much time at all, because by the time I was growing up, my grandparents and everybody had moved out of there. But my earliest memories were because we went to school a few blocks away from there, right? Which I don't know if you have a picture of that school.
Yeah.
But my grandmother used to work in the bank that was right there. It was called the Banco de Ponce.
That's right.
So I used to visit her at the bank when there goes our school,
St. John's Chrysostom.
St. John's Chrysostom.
I got tortured.
But you know, here's the thing about that. You know, we were in school. I mean, obviously you were older than me because you were always in the older grades, right? And I was with your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Because your brother and I were in the same grade. But I used to look at, we used to be out, and the eighth graders, seventh and eighth graders, used to be in a different area from where we were.
The cool cats.
Exactly. So I would look to see where John was with his buddies, and he would be surrounded by this gang of thugs. And he was like the tiny guy in the middle, and everybody was like 6 feet around him. But he was like,
I was 3 feet and everyone was just 5 feet.
Exactly. Well, whatever it was, but he was like the mafia don of this gang. And I'm like, holy cow, he's like running stuff. That's my,
I was always, I was always, and I don't want to say popular like in some arrogant way, but I always had a lot of people that would hang out with me because I made people laugh.
Yes.
I didn't talk like everyone else. I didn't want to talk like everyone else.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I didn't, so they people would laugh. And so I would get these little crews of, I mean, it's a Catholic school. So how much thugness is there, but
exactly.
But still, I mean, this was the, I guess the '70s, I guess, you know? And, but one of the things that I really loved about that time was leaving because even though I remember I was a nervous kid, even though like you saw what you saw there, that was because I was in my element. I was talking, I was happy. I was, you know, but when I was in class, you know, especially when in the younger years, you know, before you got there, when I went all 8 years to that school. Right. Mm-hmm. So my first, second, third grade were really rough years for me, you know, because people forget this, and I, this is something that I picked up later on as I did my training in my church and my, you know, all the stuff that I learned about myself during these years. But I only spoke Spanish 99% of the time. Remember, my grandparents did not speak English.
Yeah, that's true.
They raised me. My mom would come by, and my mom would sometimes talk to me, and I didn't realize that I didn't really fully know what she was saying to me all the time in English.
It's amazing.
Because I was always Spanish.
Right.
So when I went to school, they were just like, yeah, just throw them in there. This was back in the days where you had to make do, right?
And yeah.
I prefer that than what they do now. But they threw me in there, and I didn't know what teachers were asking me. I didn't know what they were saying. So I was crying a lot. I was really upset. And I was tiny, if you can imagine what I was in first grade, how tiny I was. You know, and I used to get knocked down with kids running and stuff. So it built me up to when I got to fourth grade and fifth grade, I realized that I could say things and people would laugh or think it was witty, whatever it is. Even the teachers would do that, you know, would say that. So I started using that to kind of just really defend myself because I was so scared, really, most of the time. I mean, I really was, you know.
A lot of time the humor can diffuse the situation, right?
It really did. And I used it. I still use it. You know, I'm not diffusing anything anymore because I don't really give a shit anymore. I'm who I am, but back in those days, I used it, you know, a lot. But going to this school was really a blessing because I got to get the discipline that I needed.
Right.
I don't like discipline. I don't like the word discipline. You know, there was I got to be around people. Yeah, there was a type of structure there that that I did not hate. You know what I mean? Like I enjoyed. When I was able to hang around people, you know, I enjoyed that part of it. I did not really care too much for the way that some of the nuns were treated and all that stuff. And, you know, we're not going to go into that. We'll do a whole show on that because I think Catholic school was something that we can do a whole show on.
Yes.
Catholic
school. Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting. Especially back in the days. I don't know what it is today, but back in the days, it was interesting. So that was the school. And what I wanted to show earlier was this photo, George.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
It's like the 20s.
Amazing. So,
yeah, this is our building. And this is another angle that I want to show you, which I thought this was really a cool angle. Look at this one.
Oh, look at that with the train. You can see the train there.
And yeah. Now check it out. Across the street, all those buildings are gone.
Remember,
if you look here on the left of the screen, that's our building, right?
Right.
Here's the car down at the bottom. You see the old school, 1930 something. You see the trolley in the middle there, another horse and wagons. And then those buildings now, I mean, that's like the Dunkin' Donuts.
Wow.
You know, all that stuff that's across the street there. The Learners, remember Learners?
Yeah, Learners. Oh my God.
Learners, yeah. And then this is what this was in the, I guess this was, this looks to me like the 60s.
Yeah.
Maybe late 50s, early 60s sometime. I couldn't get a date on this one.
I remember when the buses had those things on the top. Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember that too. So, but a lot of those buses really were around for about to the 70s.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe even into the 80s, really. Because I do remember that. But you said something earlier about you didn't spend a lot of time in there, but you did spend a lot of time in there. You just don't remember. But
well, yeah, I mean, I was
dropped off every single day for babysitting there.
Right, well, yeah, that's very true. So I used to stay with Titi Lula, and I was a kid, and she, you know, they used to drop me off there. And I mean, I do have some vague memories of it and being with her. And she used to take me to get the to what do you call it, the vivero, right?
To get the live chickens
and stuff. She used to take me there and watch her with these chicken heads and all these things. And I'm like, holy cow. And she was tough, man.
She ran the family, really. Yes, she was the darn of the family.
She was well into her 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was amazing. But I remember those times. And then from that point, my family moved into the areas where they live, and I still have family that lives in that area now, which is Clasen Point in the Bronx.
Yeah,
but my parents got married. That's where I started, you know, growing up and stuff like that. And
the funny thing about those viveros, they always stunk, right? They would
yes.
My grandmother would go there, and we would get. She would buy a chicken and bring it to Titi Lula, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would see a chicken walking around the house, and I'd be like, "Oh, the chicken," you know. And then later on, the chicken would disappear. I don't know what happened to the chicken, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm eating chicken. I'm like, where's the chicken? Well, I wonder where this chicken is, you know. But yeah, she was. This is people that live on the farm. That's how you survive.
That's how they get it. Exactly.
And it when they came here to the Bronx, it was no difference, the survival.
Right.
That's why these viveros opened up, because they needed to have places for these people to buy this stuff, you know?
Absolutely.
Anita's laughing because wondering where that chicken is, you know? But, you know, one of the things that I always loved was that there was such a history there that we got a little bit of, you know what I mean? Even though we were in this, you know, metropolitan-ish environment, you know, there was still this history of our families living in what they call an campo, right? In las fincas, and raising chickens. And then that was your food, you know, the eggs were your food, the animals were your food. So we had that experience, you know, and I remember my grandma going there and buying all the stuff and everybody knowing her name and stuff. And the counter was like huge for some reason in these places. I don't know, like I'm short and I know I'm short. So when I go somewhere, you know, I could see a tall counter, and that makes sense. But these things were like massive.
Right.
They were like, I don't know what they thought. They thought they were like the king and queens up there, like selling us chickens. But these experiences were something that I think were meaningful.
Yes,
it was meaningful. You know,
and it definitely, again, it shapes the character. You know, we
it does
we shapes the character going through all that and seeing all these things.
And so just to end off on this 1058 on the Boulevard building. So I read that article, it was from 2013. So I thought, well, you know, and I'd been there before that, obviously. My sister still lives in the Bronx, and I have family in the Bronx, like George.
Mm-hmm.
Family is my family. So I was researching it, and I found an article. And I realized that the building right now is under renovation. And this is what it looks like today, actually. So, this was taken this year. So they're doing, it's getting a facelift, which is
cool.
Very exciting, actually, to see that.
Definitely.
And what I was telling my wife last night, I was telling her, I was saying, you know, I don't understand how the South Bronx hasn't been gentrified yet. Not that I want that, because I know that sometimes brings heartache to some of the people that are there.
Right.
But if you live there, you should invest there and make money by the growth, instead of thinking that you can't survive the growth. Just my own personal opinion.
But, tell me. But it's interesting I was going to say, because it's interesting considering what the Bronx went through. Think about the 70s, right? The Bronx was burning, right?
Right.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, right. It was literally burning.
It was a real thing.
And it was a real thing. There's documentaries on it. And actually, what I didn't know was very interesting, because actually I was watching a documentary on it where they talked about what was called redlining. And what they did, and I didn't really realize.
That's a real estate term.
Real estate, right. But what they would do is they would draw lines around these certain areas of the Bronx. And typically they would say, okay, well, the Bronx has typically, you know, Hispanic or Black Americans in there, and it's typically considered like a more lower income or poor neighborhood. And they would put a red line around it saying, don't invest there, or insurance companies don't do any kind of, don't do any kind of insurance transactions there, because the risk is very, very high.
Right.
And, you know, there was a lot of controversy on why the Bronx was that way, and were the politicians actually really paying attention to it or not, you know?
They were not. They were just in, you know, self, it was just in, a, you know, self-interest, most right. of them, you know, I mean, part of the reason, you know, after they did that, a lot of the landlords, you know, had to get rid of these buildings. They couldn't sell the building, because who's going to buy a building in a red circle? Mm-hmm. They weren't going to buy it. So they had to figure out ways to do it. And insurance money was a easy way to do it.
Exactly.
And I remember I always tell the story about being about 5 years old or something, and pushing a chair to the window to look out the window. I still have to do that today, by the way. Pushing a chair to the window and looking out, it felt like it was almost every night to see the fires.
Yeah.
Because every night there was a fire in the distance. We lived on the fourth floor, 401, and I would go out and I would look out and I would see where the fire was tonight, and I would see a fire. I would see a building burning. And I remember there was this image burnt in my head, no pun intended, of this firefighter. And he was like on one tenement building. Right. He was like over here, right? He was like on this building, standing like this, and the building that was burning was standing right here where the microphone is, right? So he was actually leaning this way. He had the hose on, and the pressure of the hose, he was leaning forward almost all the way. The alley was right here between the buildings. He was leaning forward like this, putting out that fire of that building, like all the way this way, like that. Like, and it was, I remember thinking, even as a kid, like having some notion that pressure and that hose is the pressure is what's holding him up. If the hose stops, he falls right into
the, right, you know, exactly.
But I always remember that image. It's almost cinematic in my head, because it was at nighttime when it was happening. So it was like this big fire burning, and you see this firefighter. But this was like what was happening back in the Bronx in the 70s, you know.
Yes.
And unfortunately, you know, a lot of what ended up happening was that the Bronx became this, and we're gonna have to do a part two of this, because this is there's way too much stuff to cover. But what ended up happening was the South Bronx became the national, it gained national attention for all the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
From the president, you know. Yeah. President Carter came to visit the ruins of the South Bronx. Ronald Reagan came.
Ronald Reagan was there. Yeah. Yep.
There was a movie called Fort Apache, the Bronx, with Paul Newman, a great film. Great film. I remember seeing, I have a story about that I'll tell someday, but I remember seeing that being shot also on Fox Street where I used to.
And there was a lot of criticism of that movie because of what it depicted about the Bronx, right?
I mean, unfortunately, it wasn't wrong.
No, it wasn't wrong.
It was just sad that the people that live there, that still live there, and me included, we were all there. All of us were still there during that whole time. The sad part is that we were still trying to gain our dignity of where we were living. You know what I mean? And that really made it an embarrassment that here's this high profile film. I mean, it had Paul Newman in it. It had Danny Aiello in it. It had, I can't remember the other guy's name, but great actor. He was in
Ken Wall.
Yeah, him, Ken Wall. He was in Scarface. you know, these great actors. And so it was a high profile film. And it showed just the worst of the Bronx. Right.
Exactly.
And as a matter of fact, because it got so much criticism, they had to actually put at the beginning of the film, this film is just a story, and it does not portray the people or doesn't represent the people there. Exactly. Everyone is trying to do the best to revitalize the city, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Mayor Koch was the mayor at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I always liked Mayor Koch because he would just walk the streets. I met Mayor Koch twice, right, as because I was a, you know, used to. It's kind of embarrassing, but I was kind of a break dancer, and
yes, he was.
Yeah, and I had a little bit of people knew me a little bit because of my height, because I was short and I could dance. So I danced for the mayor on two different occasions, two different events. I danced for a few other organizations and stuff with a little crew that we had. And I got to meet the mayor, and he was always, he didn't care who he would ask. He would ask, how am I doing?
Right.
What politician today would walk around in a community and say, how am I doing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was that kind of that audacity that he put himself out there in that way, and that people were kind of like, look, he's trying.
Right.
You know, he's trying, you know, and he didn't have a lot to work with. The Bronx was did not have any money. The drugs were running rampant.
Yeah.
The 80s crack was just all over the place.
Yep.
And it was just a rough place, you know.
Exactly.
But with all that, somehow George and I got to get together,
put and I want to kind of talk a little bit about that, since we have some time. First of all, I want to give another fact.
Go for it.
That some people, I know, John, you'll know this, but this is a little more of a known fact, but I wanted to give all the main facts, that the Bronx contains the largest park in New York City.
That's right.
And that is Pelham Bay Park. Now, a lot of people think that Central Park was the largest park, but no, Pelham Bay Park is like twice the size.
Designed by the same dude, too.
Exactly. But Pelham Bay Park, which I spent many, many years, I would run the track in Pelham Bay Park. Actually, there was one point where when I was growing up in my late teens, I lived across, not across the street, but across the highway from it. And I would cross the bridge in the morning, like on a Saturday morning, and I would run the park.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a fun park to be in. Really cool. You see a lot
beautiful
of
beautiful park.
Yeah, you know, very beautiful
park. And they did a really nice job later on. I think that park is still pretty good.
It's been pretty. Yeah. It's near a neighborhood called, there's some nice houses in those neighborhoods and stuff like that. It's a very nice area of the Bronx.
It's in the part of the Bronx that didn't burn.
Exactly. But if you get a chance to visit Pelham Bay Park, it's actually a pretty cool place. But I wanted to also talk about, so when John and I really started to hit it with music, or really started to get together with music, John, I lived on an area called Castle Hill in the Bronx. And I went to a school called Holy Family School. That's where, and I used to live literally across the street from that school. It was the same school that J-Lo went to. And that was one of the big things there. Yeah. And I could have gone out with her.
Yeah, you could have, totally.
That's right.
Yeah.
But anyway, her mother was a teacher.
She was there. Like, J-No.
You sure that wasn't you? No, but her mother was my gym teacher there. And so it was pretty cool. She was a few years ahead of me, but anyway,
she lived on Black Rock.
Yes, she did. And I lived on Chatterton, which was the next block over. But there was a music store called Castle Hill Music. That was a nice walk from where I used to live, and John went with me, and I got my first drum set from Castle Hill Music.
Yeah, well, let me backpedal a little.
Go ahead.
I was playing guitar already, and I was like, George, we should start a band, whatever I was saying. And so George always wanted to play the drums, you know, but at this point he had been using a basketball as his bass drum. So he was literally hitting the basketball, and he had like a back of a chair or something. I think you actually had sticks.
I had the pad of a chair. The basketball was the bass, and only because the basketball has actually that bass sound.
It had a thump in it. Yeah,
it has a thump. So I would use that and the actual back of the chair because it had a kind of a snappy sound. This was my creativity at the time.
Yeah.
Watching, and because I was watching videos of drummers, and I would watch what they do, but I didn't have a drum set.
Right. So I remember saying one day, "Hey man, your birthday's coming up. You should tell your mother to get you a drum set." That's how I talked back then. And, and I remember we went to Castle Hill Music, and I remember when we got the drums home, you didn't know how to even set it up. Like, and I only knew from pictures I saw, like if I have, you know, guitar magazines, I would have, and then they would have a picture of a drummer in the back, you know, and I'd be like, okay, so we kind of figured it out together. And we put it on, and then, you know, it led to many, many years of playing. recording. And, you know, our last record that we did was this one right here, which was The View from Castle Hill. Glass of No was our band. We recorded three records together. We had some radio play, which was really a lot of fun. And, you know, we've told the story before about losing our good friend, David DeGasperius, who passed away, you know, suddenly, and kind of ended that for us. We tried to move on, right? We had some great musicians come in, but we couldn't. It was just difficult to kind of go on. But, you know, the how grateful I am that in the Bronx we had these places to go to. Like El Palacio was there selling musical instruments, guitar, while everything is burning. These poor people are trying to survive selling musical instruments and music. You know, right. I was able to get a guitar while all this craziness is happening around us. You were able to go to Castle Hill Music and get your drum set, even though, you know, there was all this stuff happening around us, you know. So we were grateful that they were there. And, you know, all the things that happened were for a reason. You know, it wasn't by accident. We pulled it in somehow. We created it. Mm-hmm. And we needed it. And we wanted it, you know.
Exactly. We were always hungry. Excuse me. We were always hungry for more. We were always hungry for learning, whether it was music or whether it was, you know, just learning art, learning different things. Again, how many times did we spend in the apartment in Castle Hill watching Bob Ross and
Star Trek
and all these things? But that's kind
of
all of that framed what we do today, you know, and that type of thing. But, you know, it's really interesting lessons. And again, not everything was peachy and roses either. There was some tough times there. You know,
for you, you were
more in the thick of it because where you were was a more rougher area than eventually where I was. But I still dealt with a lot of craziness. You know, I still dealt with, you know, my car was broken into many times. I've had, you know, my family had cars that were, you know, taken from them and robberies and things like that. So, there was that stuff too, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a different, you know, I think it was different because, well, I can't really say that. There was violence, you know, I mean, there was gun violence, there was drug use, there was a lot of things that were, you know, that I tried to like really not focus on while I was there.
Right.
Like, I've never done any drugs, you know what I mean? Like you, you know what I mean? We've never done anything. We've never, you know, I mean, I didn't.
That I didn't. I
not like
say,
you,
I remember
that you.
Doing drugs? Well, maybe that one time, but.
but like we never did drugs, we never smoked, we never did got, you know, we would drink a little bit here and there, like just, you know, when we got a little older, obviously. But it wasn't anything that was interesting to me. That was the main issue for me. You know, like I would see people smoking cigarettes and I would think to myself, God, that's so much work.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's so boring.
Yeah.
You know, using drugs is so boring. That's what I used to think in my head. You know, it was like just using drugs was so boring to me, you know. And that's why we never did it. And that's one of the reasons I think why we were able to put music together, while we were able to, you know, this is us here at some club.
There we go.
Look at John with his shirt open. Oh, like,
nice. Look at this.
See his little pubes. then that was Solly. Remember Solly?
Yeah, I remember Solly.
Yeah, funny guy. Yeah. And then this is us when I had hair. Now, aren't you all pissed off that George looks exactly the same? Look at his bastard.
Well, first of all, I don't know what I'm doing with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
lights up, Washington Heights. And look at me with that dark hair. That goatee. I always had a goatee, by the way, guys. This is not
new. You were born with it.
Yeah, I was born, and you know, my mom was like, "Pero qué hazo?" I was like, "Hey, some people are born like this. Goatee baby." So, but one of the things that was really good about our growing up was that we were friends first.
Yes.
Right. And then we started playing music and stuff. So there was already that connection of friendship. This is why we're doing this today.
Exactly.
Is why we're here now, because we still get along. We still talk. We still have the same stuff in common.
Yeah, we
play
ball. We were always laughing at the same things. We were always
the same kind of humor.
And, you know, I mean, there was always something him and I were doing as a kid. I mean, I remember when I broke my leg and you came to the house with a basketball ready to play. And I opened, I By the way, just so you guys know, I broke my leg, you know,
the day before,
never told him, and he was coming the next day to play basketball.
Yeah, I'm like with the ball in my hand. I'm like, yo, ready? We're going to play some ball.
I'm 17 years old, a senior.
I'm walking in. He's like this.
He opens the door, and I'm in crutches with this cast coming from the top of my leg all the way down to my ankle. He's like, what the?
I remember
the look in his face. I will never forget.
I was like, what the hell? So, yeah, that started a whole bunch of jokes.
Yeah, but we, we always played ball, you know, in the parks there and everything, but
do we have any more Bronx stuff?
Yeah, I have let me go through some of these
facts. Let's do one more.
Okay.
Let's do one more.
Yeah.
So if anybody has any questions or anything, if anybody's out there and, you know, anything about the Bronx,
absolutely.
Please let us know. I have some more pictures here, but I'm going to probably save those for another episode at some point.
Did you know, John?
Did you know
that? Wait a minute. Let me make sure I have it in the right place here. Did you know that did you know about the Bronx Manhattan High Bridge?
Yes, I did know about that.
Did you know that it's the oldest bridge in the city?
Really? That yes. I didn't know.
It was built in 1848. It was actually built 35 years before the Brooklyn Bridge.
Really?
Yes.
Damn.
And I'm going to put up a little picture of it now just so you guys can see it. If I can find where the picture. Oh, here it is. So this is what it looks like.
Oh, wow.
And it was closed for like 40 years. And it eventually they was renovated, and then it opened back up in 2016 to pedestrians and bikers to walk and, you know, bike ride back and forth.
And what does it connect?
It connects the Bronx and Manhattan.
Really?
Yes, it does.
Holy crap. Okay. That's like a big deal because George Washington Bridge, you know, that connects obviously New Jersey,
yeah.
It goes through also. You can get off of that bridge and go into Manhattan.
Exactly.
And then go directly into the Bronx.
Cross Bronx Expressway.
Yeah, it's the only way you can actually do that. So
exactly.
So that's good to know. Huh?
I didn't know that. Yeah, awesome. I got you with a couple of them there.
That's good. That's pretty good. And in case anybody wants to know where I was baptized, there it is.
Yes.
And there's George right there in the middle walking. He got kicked out again. He's always getting kicked out. I keep telling him, keep your pants up. Don't listen, especially at church. That was the thing. John Chrysostom. That was the church that we would go to right across the street from our
I used to go to that church. My mom used to bring me to that church every Sunday. We used to take the train sometimes and get off right there and go to that church and then take the train back.
Every Sunday I would go to church with my grandma. My grandmother was kind of big in the church. Like she was big time. Like she was part of a special group of women called Las Mujeres de la Santa María Madre de Dios. I can't remember what it was called, but it was something.
Mujeres
like,
de Santa?
Yeah, it was something like. Something?
Not Santeria.
Yeah, it was something. Santeria, no. It was like, it was Guadalupe, something like that.
Like Guadalupe.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know.
Hi, Sanchicha.
So she was in a motorcycle gang, basically.
Basically. She had this helmet and this leather jacket. But they all sat in the front in a special group, and Titi Mary was in there. Our Titi aunt, Mary. Titi Lula, was in that. Do you remember? No, you don't remember this guy, but there was a guy named Che. I don't remember Che. He's still friends on Facebook, but his mom was in there, and she was a big, you know, part of our group, and of course my grandmother was pretty big within the church. She would actually, in the Bronx, whenever someone would, you know, passed away or something happened, they would always do what's called a rosary, right? If anybody knows what that is, right?
Yes.
And so my grandmother was like known as someone that would lead a rosary for people. Right. So she would be invited to people's houses to lead their rosary when somebody would pass away. That she would do the rosary. And I remember sitting there because she would take me along to these and to these seances. No, I'm just kidding. No, she would take me along to. I'm sorry. Please do not write me letters. No, but she would actually.
That's John Henry Soto at protonmail.com.
She would take me along to these, and I'll be sitting there. I'm sitting there, and one day she's asked
spoken
to speak.
Tongue? Oh, no.
She said no. She's actually asked to speak, right? And so. Right. I remember being blown away by how eloquent she was.
Right.
She talked about about the word faith. Mm-hmm. And in Spanish, the word faith is fe. It's only two words, right? Fe.
Okay,
I mean, right. Two letters. Right. And so she talked about the word faith and how it's such a small word, but it means so much, and how you have to take these two little letters and put them together and come up with this whole thing. That's a lot to ask of us, but we have to find ways. And she really went off on this this thing. And I remember sitting there going, wow, she's really something, you know, and it was really impressive. Mm-hmm. to see her do that. She was my grandmother was awesome. My grandmother was tough, though. My grandmother was not your typical grandma. She worked.
Mm-hmm.
She retired working from a factory. She worked at a factory. She was, you know, she left school in the third grade in order to be able to work. And she washed clothes in the river. She was a seamstress. And those are the kind of jobs that she always had. And she taught me how to run the sewing machine. So I learned how to do that. And I would fix her sewing machine. And I knew all about la bobina. She's like, no, se rompió la bobina. Tiene que romper. So I learned how to, and this was before YouTube. So yes. I couldn't YouTube how to fix it. I had to just go in there and figure it out. And I figured things out. But she was a very, very tough lady, you know.
Yes. I got to know her a lot when she used to visit my grandmother.
Oh yeah, and they got together, and it was just a wonderful gathering. Yeah. We're going on for an hour talking about the Bronx. We could probably go on another hour easily because I didn't even show some of the stuff.
We got to do part two to this.
Definitely. Yeah, we definitely will do that because I want to actually have some people come on.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're from the Bronx, I might actually invite some people that I actually know. I say, come on the Bronx and just tell their story about growing up there. Yeah. We'll have a few people come on. We'll do that again, and we'll schedule that for very soon. But yeah, last words, Jorge.
Well, I mean, I just want to say that it was, you know, like what you said in the beginning, I think was accurate. You know, how the Bronx really shaped you. You know, it shaped me.
It did.
It really shaped you, the person. And, you know,
it made me also appreciate things a little bit more. Like, correct. I don't have the concerns that a lot of people have.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I was raised there.
Exactly.
So if I go to a store and they don't have, you know, skim milk, half and half, whatever I'm looking for, in the coffee, that could never, ever upset me.
Right.
You know, right. Actually really very, very little upsets me because
it's interesting because you've seen more than I did, but I've seen stuff even with you, right? We saw some stuff together, but
yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. We can talk about that next time, but that changed me, but it does change you to the point where, and you're absolutely right. When you grow up there, you grow up in the middle and you see these things and you, then you leave there, your whole, you know, just your whole mind completely changes about life and what's really important and what's really, you know,
yeah,
what, you know, what, like you said, what upsets you and what doesn't upset you and that type of thing. I completely agree with that. So
completely. So definitely. So, all right, folks, want to thank you all for tuning in. Appreciate it. We had some nice comments, some great people on here. We will be back for another part, and we're going to be talking. George and I are going to be doing this a lot more. We're going to be doing shows on subjects. Gonna be talking about a lot of different things, so we're gonna be doing that, and so stay tuned for that. It'll still be the Counterparts Show, but it'll be a little bit different. We won't be interviewing people, or we might bring people on depending on the subject, but it'll be a little bit different setup. So anyway, hope you're all doing well out there. Have a wonderful week. Take care of yourselves. George, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All of us here at Counterparts, have a wonderful week. Take care, and as always, peace.